Good morning, guys, and welcome back to another segment of Tiara Tuesdays. It's your girl, your host, your favorite scholar, Tiara, and I'm so excited to have you guys all back listening to me today. It is officially Black History Month, and we all have been hearing and learning about these influential African Americans for the past few weeks now, but it is officially our month, and I'm so excited. I thought it best to start off this month with Les Brown. He is the motivator. He is one of my favorite, if not my favorite, motivational speakers, and I just wanted to inform you guys about who he is, and he's still alive, so I wanted to tell you guys what he's still doing. Okay, so Les Brown was born Leslie Brown. His birthday is this February 17th. He will be 77 years young. He is aging backwards. I mean, if you Google a picture of this man, you're like, are you sure he's 77, Tiara? I'm sure. He was born in an impoverished neighborhood in Liberty City. Now, he was adopted by a woman named Mimi Brown, and he loves to call himself Mrs. Mimi Brown's baby boy. So, him and his twin brother, Wesley, were actually the product of a woman who, her man, he was in the war, and she had an affair, and she needed someone to adopt these twins that she had before he came back from the war and realized that she was cheating on him while he was fighting in the war, and she got pregnant with two boys, twins at that. So she found this woman, Mimi Brown. Mimi Brown couldn't have any kids of herself. She was 45 at the time when she adopted Les and Wesley Brown. And she took him in. She also adopted five other youth at the time. So she had a total of seven adopted kids. Really great. Mr. Motivator, Mimi Brown, baby boy. Les would talk about how when she would go clean for these wealthy families on Miami shores, that sometimes, you know, she would take him or she would take his brother or some of his siblings. And at one home in particular, the husband would listen to positive affirmations or positive speeches by Zig Ziglar. And Les didn't know, but his mind was being trained. Every day he went there and he listened to this Zig Ziglar, this motivational speaker. It was transforming his mind into something greater. Now, they were very poor. Mimi Brown, when she would cook for these families, they would give her the scraps. So they'd be like, oh, you know, whatever's left over from our plates, you could put it all in one big Tupperware and take it and go feed those seven kids you adopted. And Les Brown was very appreciative of this because they would have starved if not been for these scraps that these wealthy families provided for them. They also would give them the hand-me-down clothes from their kids, and they use this to wear, Les Brown, his brother, and his sisters, they use these clothes to wear during the school year. If not, they would have went unclothed. So it just shows you how at a young age, he was very grateful for his circumstances, and he didn't let his circumstances be the end-all, be-all. And he would say to his mother, you know, these houses, they're so beautiful here on Miami Shores. I'm going to get you a house like this one day. And he said his mom would say, oh, no, you don't have to do that. And Les would say, no, I'm going to get you a house like this one day. As a child, Les Brown was actually labeled DT, which his peers would call him DT, which meant the dumb twin. They would say that his brother, Wesley, was the smart twin and he was the dumb twin. And Les, he took on this personification, making it his reality. He felt like he was, in fact, dumb. Until one day, a teacher changed his life. He went into a classroom looking for one of his friends, and the teacher called him, young man, come here and write this problem on the board. And all the kids laughed, and Les Brown was like, I can't do that. And the teacher said, well, why not? And he said, well, I'm not one of your students. And the teacher said, I don't care. Come here anyway and write this equation on the board. And Les Brown said, no, I can't. And the kids all laughed. They continued to laugh. And they said, he's DT. He's DT. And the teacher says, well, what's DT? And a kid shouted out, dumb twin. He's the dumb twin. His brother Wesley is a smart twin. But this is Les. This is the dumb one. You must have them confused. And the teacher said, come here, young man. Liz said, no, they're right. They're right. I am dumb. I am the dumb twin. It's true, sir. He said, no, come here, man. The teacher told Liz, somebody else's opinion of you does not have to become your reality. And this changed Les Brown's life because as a child, he took on this personification of being called the dumb twin. And so now he finally had a teacher telling him that he could do more and he could go to the board in front of the class and write down this equation. He was capable of that. This was somebody who saw the rainbow in his cloud, as Maya Angelou would say. Okay, so going a little bit forward in Les Brown's life, he had a dream to become a disc jockey, which is like a radio personnel, is what we say nowadays, a radio host. And so he would go to the Miami Shores radio station and he would persistently say, are you guys hiring? I'm going to be a disc jockey. And they would deny him day after day and say, you don't have any experience as a disc jockey. We don't have any jobs for you. And he'd go every day. And finally, on the seventh time he went, the owner of the radio station told him, go get me some coffee. And he became the errand boy of that radio station. So that's how he got his way into the Miami radio station. He was very clever. Now, upon being the errand boy, he'd go out of his way to gain the attention of the radio host because he was trying to build a bond, build a connection, get them to trust him. So he'd wash their cars. He would go get their food. I mean, he was an errand boy, but he would go above and beyond being an errand boy, above and beyond what they called him to do. Like, oh, I figure you guys were hungry, so I went in, I got you some food. Oh, I saw, you know, these cars were dirty, so I cleaned them. I saw this hallway needed to be swept, so I swept it. I saw this equipment needed to be dusted, so I dusted it. He just would go beyond what was called for. And Les Brown, he says all the time in his speaking, we must be our best selves at all times, no matter who's looking. If no one's looking, we must be our best selves. So in doing this, he gained the trust of these radio hosts and they began to teach him how to work the controls in the radio room. So he was learning and building his knowledge on radioing. He was preparing himself for his opportunity. He says that it's better to be prepared for an opportunity than have an opportunity come and not be prepared. My favorite story he tells, and you can listen to him on his own, but one of my favorite stories he tells is about how he became a disc jockey from being an errand boy. And one of the radio, it was a Sunday, and one of the radio hosts was drinking on the job, and it was just Les and this one radio host, and he got so drunk so quickly he couldn't even finish his set. The radio producer calls and Les answers, and he says that he's too drunk to finish his set. Les goes, I know. He's like, don't you know how to work the controls, young man? Les says, yes, I do. He goes, go in there and work the controls, but don't say anything. Les hung up the phone. Les said he called his mama and his girlfriend at the time and said, turn up the radio. I'm about to come on the air. He went in there and said, this is the motivator. Mimi's Brown's baby boy. There's no one like me, therefore there will be no one after me. Watch out, I'm your love man. And he put on a slow record and he was on since. That just tells you how you have to be prepared for your opportunity. Eventually, though, he got fired from the radio show because he was very controversial. He was trying to empower and educate the public, and people weren't interested in this. They wanted to hear the gossip. You know, they wanted to hear opinions, news. You know, they didn't want to hear encouraging and motivational things when they listened to the radio. But somehow Les Brown got his job back for the second time. He was fired again because his intentions were the same. And he said it took him being fired twice to realize that he needed to pursue a different avenue. So he ended up becoming an Ohio State legislator, and he goes, he thought it was crazy, but his friend suggested this to him, like, you should become a legislator. And he was living in Ohio at the time, and or after he moved from Miami, he moved to Ohio, and he became a legislator, and his friend's like, you can do it. And he was like, but I don't know anything about being a state legislator. And his friend goes, well, neither do those people. Les laughed, and he became a state legislator. So I'm just trying to show you on how he came from being abandoned, basically. You know, he had to be adopted, and his adopted mother was so poor. Les Brown said they were so poor that the roaches didn't even want to stay in their house because there was no food there. He said he was so poor he'd walk past an ATM and trip the alarm. So I just want to show you how you can do and be anything, no matter the circumstance. Finally, in 1980, Les Brown, he must have said to himself, you know, enough is enough. I have to dedicate myself fully into being a motivational speaker. I have to enthrall myself in this. There is no half-ass with your dreams. You either fully pursue your dreams or you don't. So he was still trying to be a speaker, but he was doing other things like being a legislator, working at the radio host instead of working for himself. But finally, in 1980, he said, you know what? I'm going to work on myself. He began to transform his mind. He began to listen to motivational speakers. He began to read 10 to 15 pages a day of positive information. He began to read and to learn about fields that had nothing to do with speaking, but just so he could be privy to that knowledge, you know. He began to memorize 3 to 4 quotes every day. He said he memorized these quotes because he wanted to use and implement them in his speeches when necessary. Then, when he finally starts to speak, he began speaking at elementary schools, churches. Then he elevated to major corporations like T-Mobile and McDonald's. He then won a National Speakers Association Peers of Excellence Award in 1989. In 1993, he was offered his own special show by PBS called The Les Brown Show. But that show was canceled after a year because it was just too empowering. It was too positive. It was too educational. In 1994, he went on to win this Toastmasters Award called the Golden Gavel. Today, he has written over 200 books. He still continues to speak. He speaks virally on YouTube. I watch him every morning. He has survived cancer twice. And he is worth $12 million. So, just from coming from nothing to now, and he's 77. He talks as if he has so much life to live. And he often says that I know that I have more time behind me than in front of me. So positive. I highly encourage you to look into this man, Les Brown. You can look him up on YouTube. My favorite speeches I have told you guys in the past is a speech he did in 1992 at the Georgia Dome, encouraging everybody to live their dreams. Oh, it's just so powerful. He will really spark a fire under your hiding. So, with all this in mind, I want you to know that it's possible, as Les Brown would say, it's possible that you live your dreams. It's necessary that you live there, that you live your dreams. It's you. You have greatness within you. You can do this. This is your stuff. Nobody else was given the dreams, the creativity, the purpose that you were given, but you. I want to say a quote by him that I really like. You can't get out of life alive, so you might as well have fun anyhow. A lot of people are scared to pursue their dreams because they don't think they're going to make it. And so often people die with their dreams surrounding them. They say that the graveyard is filled with unmet and unfulfilled dreams. So I want to leave you guys with a video just about that, a little bit more about going to the graveyard with your dreams, because you can't get out of life alive, so you might as well pursue your dreams anyway. But before I do that, don't forget to share this podcast. If you found it inspiring, if you found it encouraging, if you thought, my sister needs to listen to this on her way to work, or my husband needs to listen to this while he's in the shower, please feel free to share and pass it along. And don't forget to donate. My birthday is coming up, I will say. So please don't forget to donate. I want you to go to anchor.fm/TR92 right now. And I want you to hit the sponsor button. And I want you to donate $9.99 to me right now. Go and donate. I also want you to follow me on Spotify. I don't have enough followers. Follow me on Spotify. I also want you to rate me on Apple Podcasts. If you go to Apple Podcasts and type in Chiara Christopher and you go to the bottom, you can rate 5 stars. Go ahead and rate me 5 stars. I need my ratings to be up. And lastly, I have created a page just for you guys. So I created another Instagram, and it really is to promote my writing abilities, you know, because I'm writing my autobiography and I live right here by the University of Washington. So I thought I could like tutor people and help them edit and proofread and research and annotate and write bibliographies and that sort of thing. So I have created it as a combination of promoting my writing services and my podcast. So go to Instagram and type in Chiara L. Christopher and start following me right now for information on my writing services and to keep up to date with my podcast. But I am going to leave you with this powerful video by Les Brown.
I was reading something by Howard Thurman that really grabbed me. He was an advisor to Mahatma Gandhi, to Martin Luther King Jr., and to Albert Schweitzer. And I was reading and I couldn't go to sleep this night. He said, the ideal situation for a man or woman to die is to have family members praying with them as they cross over. He said, but imagine, if you will, being on your deathbed and standing around your bed, the ghost of the dreams, the ideas, the abilities, the talents given to you by life, you, for whatever reason, you never pursued those dreams. You never acted on those ideas. You never used those gifts. And there they are standing around your bed looking at you with large angry eyes saying, we came to you and only you could have given us life. And now we must die with you forever. And the question is, if you died today, what dreams, what ideas, what leadership, what books, what gifts will die with you? A very good friend that I lost recently, Miles Monroe, said, the wealthiest place on the planet is not in the Far East where there's oil in the ground. It's not in South Africa where there are diamond mines. He said, the wealthiest place on the planet is the cemetery. Because there you find potential never realized. There you find dreams never pursued. There you find people allow themselves to be imprisoned by fear and living a small life. Maybe that's why one woman asked in a moment of anguish, what if you live your whole life only to discover it was wrong? Maybe that's why Henry David Thoreau said, oh God, to reach the point of death, only to realize that you've never lived, only to realize that you've never scraped the surface of your potential.